that's the record button. Have we started?
We have started.
So, this is the Meat for TeaCast. We might always start like that. Who knows?
Hello, everyone.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Meat for TeaCast Season 5, Episode 11.
She's Elizabeth McDuffie.
I am. That's Mark Allen Miller.
That's me.
You haven't heard me in conversation with a guest in a little while.
It's been a hot minute, yeah.
But we haven't been shirking our duties. We've brought you a lot of special handful, maybe not quite a handful, some three special episodes of reading events. And we like to give you the feeling of what it's like to be at a poetry reading or at a bookstore at a reading, because it's a nice, intimate, fun literary experience.
Mm-hmm.
Those of you that don't live in Western Mass can treat your ears to a slice of Western Mass literary life that way.
Mm-hmm. So if you haven't heard any of those episodes, definitely go back, check them out. Like, for example, the Season 5, Episode 8, the Florence Poet Society.
Oh, yes, that was for the release of Silkworm, Volume 16, which I had a poem published in.
That was a really, really fun reading. So,
and most recently, of course, John Shire's book release party at Splendor Solace Bookstore for his collection of 100-word stories titled For Now, which is a lovely book, and it is available. You can get it from us. You can get the ISBN or just even the title and author name from our website and trundle on over to your indie bookstore near you and ask them to order it. That's our favorite way for you to get our books.
Yep. And there's there's the big A if you want. It's all good. However
speak
you want to
not.
Get your books.
Speak it not.
Just call it the big A. That's all. And speaking of books, we'll get to the conversation you had with him in a minute. We got a few other things to do, but we've got a book also with John Yamaris, our second book with John. He is our special guest for this episode.
He's the first guest to have come on the podcast 3 times.
Yeah.
This will have been his third time.
I can tell you, there's no lack of interesting conversation to be had even at the third time around.
We're talking about his new book, which is available from us now at the aforementioned places, called People and Other Bad Ideas. We're primarily talking about that, and he treats you to some readings from it. But we talk about other things, and he talks about another book that he has with another publisher called The Street, which is also excellent. I'm adding it to my library. Hope you'll add it to yours.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, really great. Great conversation. But before
so
we
much
can get
fun.
Into that, I think we gotta take care of a few things.
Housekeeping. So all the very best ways to support us can be found on our website at meatfortea.com. That is meatfortea.com. There you will see our spring store where there's all sorts of wonderful things, t-shirts and hoodies and tote bags and mugs and socks and you name it, aprons.
Lions and tigers and bears, oh my.
There's lovely stuff. And you'll also find a link directly to our podcast, which is available everywhere, but the link takes you to our podcast on Good Pods because we love Good Pods. They really champion the indie podcaster, and we applaud them for that. And we just found out we're ranked number 5 in the top 100 monthly arts podcasts. Indie arts podcast. We're grateful for that.
I think we're like number 13 in the
non-indie. We're number 13.
It's pretty great.
It's amazing. We're actually ahead of LeVar Burton's podcast for now.
It's crazy.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take it. No problem.
I'll take it. We got to catch up with Hidden Brain. Looking at you, Hidden Brain, and we're coming for you.
So other ways to support us, we've got a Patreon page. We're still working on adding more stuff. We did add a little bit more recently.
Yeah, there's some new goodies in there, some stuff from some Cirques.
Yeah, there's another one going up pretty soon. And then, You can also donate. Go to our donate page at meatfortea.com, and you can either donate directly or you can do a tax deductible write-off by following the link to the Gateway City Live.
So we do urge you to consider making a tax deductible donation, which supports not only us, but our wonderful fiscal sponsor, Gateway City Live. They're amazing. They do lots of wonderful things to support the arts. So a small part of your donation to help us helps them.
Exactly.
Two birds with one stone.
It's kind of a win-win-win. So we've got a couple of reviews, huh?
We do have a couple of reviews. There's one from Christian Livermore, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she wrote a review on the episode from the, well, Florence Poet Society release reading that we were part of. She says, "I love this one. It's so great to be able to hear a live recording that I wouldn't ordinarily be able to get to." Our point exactly. Thanks, Christian.
Mm-hmm. And we've got a review from Daniel McGinn, just on a special preview of the Beatles episode we did on the wonderful Creative Piecemeal podcast, where we were part of a panel talking about all things trivia. And Daniel McGinn says, "I really nerded out on this podcast. I don't know why I felt I knew everything there is to know about the Beatles, but I was surprised and educated and delighted by how deep Beatlemania can go." And that's the season 5, episode 9 is that special preview. And we urge you, after you've whet your appetite with that preview, to go over to Creative Piecemeal, Tami Takeishi's wonderful podcast. Listen to the whole thing, because it's worth it.
Yep, it's really worth it.
We've got another review from Daniel McGinn. Thank you, Daniel McGinn.
Yay.
He says, "I'm someone who primarily reads poetry." This is on season 5, episode 10 of John Shire's For Now, his book launch party. "I'm someone who primarily reads poetry, and the 100-word short story fits my attention span beautifully. I really enjoyed this reading, and I felt like part of the audience in the small and local bookstore, even though I live in California. This podcast has a way of making me feel at home wherever they happen to be broadcasting from." Well, thank you very much, Daniel. And while we're thanking people, I want to take a moment and give special thanks to Death by DVD. And that's a podcast you should check out. It's great. I've listened to one episode. I'm going to listen to more. But Death by DVD has left us a plethora of 5-star reviews on a ton of episodes, and he's really just gone deep. He even has listened to our inaugural 2 episodes, the 2-part Cold Cuts and Cool Cats.
Man, that goes back a few years.
So he's going all the way into canon.
Yeah. All right.
So thank you, Death by DVD, and I believe we've got a trailer. From him that you'll be hearing, if not on this one, on a episode coming soon.
Yeah.
One other little bit of information before we launch into the podcast. Dan McGinn is co-author of a book that we're very close to having finished with Scott Ferry, called Fill Me With Birds. So be excited for that. Mark's pretty far into the layouts.
Yeah, pretty much almost done with the layouts. It's a really great back and forth poetry collaboration.
It's wonderful.
So if you like that kind of thing where they, I'm not exactly sure, did they basically write and then respond to each other? Or
I think so.
Yeah, it feels like it. Reading through it and working on the layout, it really feels like it's definite
good collaboration.
Back and forth conversation via poetry. And pretty lengthy too. I think it's like 100-some-odd pages. Mm-hmm. It's a good sized book. So that'll be probably coming out sometime, probably by the end of January, my guess. So keep your eyes on the Meat for Tea page, the Meat for Tea press page for that as well. Or, you know, go to Meat for Tea on Facebook and follow us. And
we'll
be announcing that there.
Mm-hmm. To leave you with, before we tuck into our conversation, we're open for submissions. You want to be published in Meat for Tea, don't you? The theme for this upcoming issue is boba. You know better than to take themes literally. You know that you're just meant to have fun with them.
Yeah.
But we're open for submissions now. until February 18th. So send us your art and your writing and your recipes and your jokes and your comics, your dramatic monologues.
Have we had any good dramatic monologues in a while? I don't think so.
Published one years ago. Haven't had one for a while.
We're overdue, so get on it, people. So, shall we tuck into this conversation with John?
Yes.
All right, so here we are, Elizabeth, in conversation with John Yamaris.
I am thrilled to welcome and announce our first third-time guest to the Meet for Tea cast. Illustrious poet, prolific poet, John Yamaris will be talking to us about a few things, a lot of things, notably one of which is his new book we published, People and Other Bad Ideas, maybe The Streets too, treat us to some select readings. So without any further ado, welcome, John. So nice to have you back.
Boy, yeah, third time, you know, third time's supposed to be bad luck, but I think this one's the charm. I'm really excited and happy and honored to be talking with you. This is really cool. I've been doing this a long time, 54 years now I've been publishing.
Wow.
And I've rarely been treated as professionally and nicely as you folks have treated me, and that means a lot. So thank you, and thanks for having me on the show here.
Oh, thank you. Glad to have you. I'm proud to have, this is our third book we've published by you too, is that correct?
No, second.
Second book. Why did I think it was our third? No, it's our second. I guess I'm just looking to the future.
I'm looking to the future too, and I hope there will be a third book with you folks. But the two we've done so far, I was saying this the other day that I've been lucky enough to have had 39 books published. And of those 39, if I were to rank my top eight or so, these two books would be in that top number, probably in the top five of my favorite of my books.
Wow.
And this latest one, is partly due to your fault. If you remember, we were doing the Meat for Tea cast podcast.
Talking about your other book.
Talking about my other book, my first book. And I was reading some new things and you said, oh, these are all people poems. You should do a book of portraits of people. And that's kind of what kickstarted this book. This book, which is now called People and Other Bad Ideas.
My favorite title, perhaps, ever. I love it so much.
Well, thank you. So you get 50% credit for that title. So pat yourself on the back.
The and other bad ideas part is what really makes it for me. And in preparation for our chat, I've been rereading it. And, you know, I don't know if it's the first time I read it, but Jeff Weddle's introduction is just so wonderful.
Oh, I asked him to do it. I was honored that he said yes. And then he sent me back this thing and it was just a couple of hundred words. And before I read it, I thought, oh man, it's only a couple of hundred words. I wish he said more about me because I'm me and I deserve a big long thing. And Jeff nailed it. He got what the poems were about and what I'm trying to accomplish in the poems. And he did it in just a page and a half. And it was, for me, that's the best part of the book, his introduction. And if anybody needs a way to get into or understand my poetry, get the book and read Jeff Weddle's introduction, and that's all you need to know.
He really nails it.
Yeah.
He understands what you're about. He understands what you're trying to do with your poems. He recognizes your success in doing what you're trying to do with your poems, because I write poetry too, you know, and it's not every time you set out to write a poem with what you're trying to do that you achieve what you're trying to do. Sometimes that thing you were trying to do just doesn't happen.
Most of the time it doesn't happen. Yeah. Luckily, I've been doing this a long time, and you know, you get to be a proficient at anything if you keep at it long enough. Even now I have more clunkers than home runs. So, but I'm thick-skinned and thick-skulled and persistent, so I just keep at it.
And that's the main thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I talk to aspiring writers and students, and I tell them that, at least for me, the advice I could give is to stay at it, keep consistent, do it every day. When I talk to aspiring writers and I say, "Wait, what are you doing now?" And they'll say, "Oh, well, I'm reading. I'm waiting to be inspired." And I really almost want to grab them by the neck and choke them, because inspiration is, it's, this is the wrong word, don't take it the wrong way, it's for amateurs. If you want to be professional about it, do the work every day, and inspiration will be a nice byproduct, but you still got to do the work every day.
I agree. You have to show up on the page.
Yep. When I was growing up, and again, I was talking about this the other day, when I was growing up, I had the example of my parents and my uncles and my grandparents who were lunch pail type of people. They went to work every day and they carried their lunch pail, and that was their badge of honor. And I guess that work ethic was instilled in me. And even though I'm doing something that might be considered artsy, or you know what I'm getting at, but it's not a lunch pail type of job, but I still deep down try to have that same lunch pail type attitude.
I think you have to.
For some reason, I want to read something from the new book, from our
maybe
book, People and
because
Other.
Because I asked Bad you to idea. In our emails.
well, you did, but I didn't think I would want to do something so quickly into our conversation here. But
go with the flow. If that's what you're feeling like doing right now, that's absolutely what you should do.
Yeah, I just want to read a quick one.
I encourage that. Thank you.
Okay, here goes. Every man loves the smell of his own farts. Billings was different. His were so bad he had to get up and leave the room. That's probably why he never got married. It was horrible. No woman stayed with him very long. Even his dog ran away twice, which was okay with Billings. He didn't mind being alone. He liked the quiet. It gave him time to think and listen to his music. No one liked his music either. Life for Billings was almost perfect. If he could only get used to the smell of his own farts.
Yay. I love that one.
And that poem, if I think about it, is a nice overview of how I look at my writing. It's meant to be humorous. It's meant to be on the surface, not so serious. And hopefully, like Billings farts, it'll sneak up on you.
It does. It does. There's. I find when I'm reading your poetry, and I should say right now that it's really amazing that you picked this one, because that's exactly where I had my bookmark if I was going to make requests. I kid you not. It was right there on page 28. So that's serendipity.
I have a new one, which if our association continues into the future, as I hope it
me
will.
Me too.
And we both were around and prosper. I'd like this very short poem to lead off the new book.
Ooh, I'm excited.
It's only, I don't know, 20, 25 words, and it goes like this. He said it's like that moment just before drowning. You're not under the water, and you're not out of the water. The only thing you know is you're not dead yet.
Wow. That does the job, John. That does the job of a poem.
Did you just call me a job, Johnny?
I did not. But that poem does the job.
I'm glad you liked it. We're talking about carrying a lunch pail and doing the job. I was lucky enough, and again, this goes back to my association with you folks. You've allowed me to be myself and to experiment and try new things. And one of the things you folks have allowed me to do is when People came out, you allowed me at the same time with another publisher to publish a book called The Street. And The Street is a memoir of what it was like for me growing up in northeastern Pennsylvania in the 1950s. And that's where I got this lunch pail type of mentality for my writing that I've carried through in my life. Yeah, and The Street is published by Anxiety Press. And if it's weird, I don't know why, but if you go looking for The Street on Amazon, you have to go under books. You can't just type in my name. You have to search under the heading for books.
Weird.
Yeah, I don't know why, but they've been unable to correct that. But if you go on Amazon to look for People and Other Bad Ideas, you could just type in my name. I guess that's because they figure readers know that I'm full of bad ideas, so I'm easy to find there.
I think that's because Mark set it up that way. But I have to get my hands on a copy of The Street. That looks wonderful. And of course, we allowed you to do something with another publisher. We didn't have the bandwidth to produce two books that quickly. We didn't want to stop you.
Well, let's talk about bandwidth. Meat for Tea is expanding, growing. I'm really impressed with what you guys are doing.
Thank you.
I consider myself lucky to be along for the ride. And it's neat to see how Meat for Tea is adding little products. You know, you got coffee mugs and scarves and t-shirts, and you're adding different types of creative people. It's not just poetry. You're publishing novels. It's really fun to see. And for my money, Meat for Tea is quickly becoming the place to be for new experimental and daring literature.
You have no idea how much that just thrills me to hear it.
Oh, I mean it. I mean it.
It's such an honor. Because I guess it's what we set out to be. And I should say, if there's any would-be indie publishers out there, if you think this is a road to riches, find yourself another job. This is not it. If it's just your calling and you want to get the works of wonderful writers out there and you don't care if you're a little bit broke most of the time, then go for it. But it's driven by passion and not by profit.
Oh, without a doubt. People don't understand how much love I've been around a long time. Like I said, I've been doing this for 54 years, and every publisher that I've been involved with got into the business because they love it, not because they're going to get rich at it. And the ones that have thrived at it, like you guys, and it's a relative term, thriving, but you're thriving. The ones that have thrived at it know that it's not a walk in the park. It's a lot of work. It's not a 9-to-5 job. I know you guys are probably going 7 days a week doing what you do.
Close to. I don't know if you got the most recent issue of Meat for Tea yet. I've been...
Yep.
Oh, good. I've been dealing with a mountain of shipping. And I got a flurry of emails because, you know, the shipping department consists of me, myself, and I. That's the entire team.
And two of them you can't trust.
Not always. And sometimes they need to sleep, this bizarre thing. Yeah. But I got a flurry of emails. I don't have my contributor's copy yet. I'm like, well, it was Christmas, and I did have people over, and I did host a dinner. Like, there was a bit of a pause. I think Amazon has built up some unusual expectations in people.
Yeah, and the mails are so screwy. And personally, here, we have... The mails are so backed up that they've got, you know, fill-in drivers, and typically our mail ends up at a mailbox down the street, and we're going, you know, hey, do you have our mail? I got yours. Let's trade. And, you know, I won't even go into that. Let me read another one.
Yes, please.
From people and other bad influences.
Yes, please.
It's the longest one in the book, which means it's all of three pages long.
Of course.
Lita was a dancer.
I knew it.
I think it was 1969, and we're sitting on the floor in the front room of her house playing records on the stereo. I remember playing Steppenwolf and Simon and Garfunkel. I remember she had her shoes off and was showing me her feet, how they were all messed up even at such a young age from so many years of standing on point. And she said she wasn't any good and would never really get anywhere at it because she was so short. But man, she loved dancing, and nobody was going to see her feet anyway. At 18, I thought I was a poet. But I had never read Hermann Hesse and only knew Steppenwolf as a rock band, and it didn't really matter because there was Lita, who was right about being too short to be a great ballerina, but she was young and beautiful and had a flower behind her right ear, and she smelled like just-cut roses and fresh grass. She had real short red hair and hung around with a crowd who spent summers at the lake and liked to talk about their new cars and all the money they had. I don't even know why she went after me in the first place, but she did. Maybe she thought I was different, which I was, because I was young and dumb and awkward. And when I walked across the room, I could feel my brain balanced on the top of my head, and it was just a challenge, just getting from here to there. But I thought I was different and thought I was a poet. And maybe that's what Lita saw, because Lita was a dancer. And deep down inside of her, she didn't like the lake, and she didn't like talking about cars or money. I only knew her for that one summer, and our romance, such as it was, only lasted a couple of weeks because the play ended. I didn't tell you we were in a play together, did I? Well, it ended. It was a lousy play, and I was a lousy actor, and it only lasted a weekend. And she sent me a telegram on opening night, which I thought was the coolest thing anyone ever did. Yeah, Lita was a dancer, and I was a poet. And I finally did get to read Steppenwolf. But I thought the band was a whole lot better.
Thank you so much for that. And I knew that was the one you were going to pick because I've been reading that, and I knew that was the longest one in the book. And that one resonates with me, and it will with a lot of readers, I'm sure, for a variety of reasons. But my feet are also pretty beat up looking because I studied ballet for a long time.
Oh, really? Same reason from standing on point, huh?
Oh, beautiful legs, ugly feet. That's what happens to a dancer. But who sees your feet anyway, like Lita says? They have these things called shoes. But that, and then I could feel my brain balance on the top of my head. That is just such a visceral description of a particular type of social awkwardness. I've never heard it captured quite so physically.
Well, thank you. You know the feeling, don't you?
I do, because I had that too, even as a pretty teenage girl doing ballet, I could feel the brain balance on top of my head. I was uncomfortably aware of it.
You know,
that might be a poet thing.
Yeah.
Possibly.
You know, half of the poems in half of my books are all about those awkward moments. I can't say it's fun trying to illuminate those moments, but those are the ones that stand out for me, and hopefully for the readers, too. It stands out for them.
I think they're the ones that resonate with people, definitely, because whether or not someone studied ballet, or whether they listened to Steppenwolf, and I have to ask you what your favorite Steppenwolf song was in a minute, but whether any of that happened, everyone's experienced feeling a little bit awkward. So everyone can relate to that.
While we're talking here, I'm flipping through those hour two books. And I really do see them as hour books.
I do,
you know,
too.
It's a collaborative. Well, you know, this cover of people.
I love it.
And that started out. Mark took what was one larger picture. My friend Dave cut it up and did that repetition on the back cover. And then Mark even cut it up even further and split it into the front and the back and blew it up. And the cover's worth the price of entrance, as far as I'm concerned.
Mark has some mad skills in graphic design.
Yeah.
I will say that.
Yeah. You know, again, I've dealt with a lot of publishers, and you guys seem to touch all the right bases, and I feel comfortable and welcome and warm with you guys.
That's what we want. Also, like, we want your ideas to be at the forefront. We want readers to feel like you're connecting with the actual author, what they wanted. It's important to us.
Okay. You give us free rein, but you're not afraid to say, maybe you might want to rethink that.
Exactly.
And that give and take, that push and pull is really cool. Push and pull makes me think of throwing some punches in a fight.
Oh, nice.
And if we go back to our 24 poems, which is the first book of mine that you guys published. This was earlier in 23.
Which my father loves, by the way.
Oh, and I'm going to send him a signed copy of the new book and also a copy of the Street, which I think he will like.
Yeah, he's a big fan. And he's a literary man, so it's no small praise.
Hey, how old is he?
87.
God.
And is,
well, I'll be 73 next birthday.
So not quite as old as all that. He has actually taken it upon himself to get your books into a bookstore, an indie bookstore in Bellows Falls, Vermont, called Corner Bookshop. And I believe they have all of your books except for People, and that's coming next. But they're carrying your books in Bellows Falls, Vermont.
Well, bless them. I will for sure get those copies out to them first thing in the morning tomorrow, I promise. And hey, let me get back to my thought here, talking about throwing punches and this poem from our book, 24 Poems. And it goes like this. TJ thought he was tough, and he was, also a good 6 inches taller than me, but I caught him off guard when I lunged at him on the bus stop after school. We were maybe, I don't know, 17, and he'd already been scouted by the Mets, so that should tell you how big he was. But like I said, I caught him off guard and smothered him in punches. And pushed him up against the side of the bus and kept on punching until he said he'd had enough. And I stood back with sweat and tears and dirt and snot running down my face, and I walked onto the bus feeling a good 6 feet taller than I actually was. And when I got to my seat and looked out the window, the creepy son of a bitch was still on the ground with his blonde hair covered in dirt and a great big surprised look on his face. He never made it to the Mets, and I never won another fight again.
Ah, that packs a punch. But honestly, you know, we were talking about, well, I said your poem did the job of an earlier poem you read, and I'd love to read your musings on what you believe the job of poetry is.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I'd like to, in the future...
Oh, I thought you had something there. You threw me a curve.
I'd like to read your insights on what you believe the job of poetry is.
Well, for me personally, it's just to illuminate those little small moments and those things that for me, very few other writers like to talk about. Like, I've written poems about, you know, a hair on my nose or looking at my face in the mirror. And again, it goes back to doing the job and not taking yourself too... I want to read something here. It's a poem from the new book, People.
Cool.
The university poet had a beard and wore a t-shirt that read "Going Nowhere Fast." He read his poems with intensity and leaned against the bookshelf, stroking his beard and pausing in all the wrong places. His students loved him. The young girls thought he was hot, and he had an apartment down the street filled with an unfinished novel, dirty dishes, and dreams that would never, ever come true.
Oh, fantastic.
And we'll be back in just a moment. And welcome back.
You know, when I think about the job of poems, I think yours really do it so well and so efficiently, because I think it is to shine a light on things we don't pay much attention to.
Okay. With that in mind, you and I, for tonight, seem to be right on the same page.
I love that.
Here's another one. Now, our book, People and Other Bad Ideas, is let's see, what is it? It's 54 pages, so it's not that long. So I won't read the whole book, but I want to read one more from the book, and it illustrates about illuminating those small moments in time and in a life. And this poem reads, "He was in a nursing home memory unit. The last time I was there, he was in wrinkled blue pajamas and a robe. We sat in the community room and the TV was on, and the place had that smell of medicine, sweat, and age. Sitting there across from him, trying to cheer him up, I said, 'My father-in-law always used to say, don't get old.' I guess he liked that because he smiled, looked down at the floor, and said, almost to himself, 'I'm not old. I'm just a young guy something really bad happened to.'"
I love that one so much. And that's one of the ones that Jeff Weddle draws attention to in his introduction too, if I'm not mistaken. It's so powerful. And it's such an insight on aging, because it's true. You still feel like that 20-year-old. In a lot of ways.
Tell me about it.
Until you look in the mirror and then you're like, oh,
you know,
what happened?
I was taking down the Christmas lights yesterday, And I'm 72, and I was climbing the tree out front to get the lights down. And I'm thinking, holy shit, I'm 72. I shouldn't be up in a tree. And then I had to laugh because I thought about the time, it was about 5 years ago, when I heard on the news that Keith Richards got a concussion when he fell out of a coconut tree in Hawaii.
Oh, my gosh.
And I thought, well, if Keith Richards can do it, so can I. So
you've probably taken a little bit better care of your body than Keith Richards, I'd imagine. Just
I don't know. But I have the same appreciation that he did for the old blues men. And there's another poem in our book, People. We keep bouncing around the pool balls on the table, going from subject to subject.
It's perfect.
But talking about Keith Richard made me think about this poem about, well, I'll read it. Did you ever hear of Son House? Who? Son House. He played the blues, man. The blues? What sort of weak-ass shit is that? Oh, Son House played the guitar like he had 10 hands, and when he sang, the walls would shake. That's just weak ass. Maybe, but did you ever hear of Son House? Did you ever hear of Son House?
Well, when I think of the word Son House, I think of like the Sun Recording Studios, which is a different spelling altogether, S-U-N.
Sun, it's S-O-N. Yeah. And I don't know what Son House's real name was, but he did a bunch of recordings in the 30s.
I have not. I've got to check him out.
S-O-N House. And then in the mid to late 60s, there was a boom when the white music record buying world heard of all these old guys that kind of predated rock and roll, and Son House had a bit of a resurgence. And if you look on YouTube and things, you can find videos of Son House being near 80 playing, and he looks like he's a man possessed. His eyes roll back in his head, and he plays the guitar, like I said in the poem, like the walls are shaken, and it's just really a thing of beauty to watch Son House play the guitar and sing.
Oh, my gosh.
And yeah, you got to check it out.
I have to. So this is the real king of rock and roll.
All those guys. Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
I was just going to say, she's like the real progenitor.
Oh, yeah. Her and that guitar of hers. And then you see, you know, they had a thing on TV the other day, Christmas at Graceland, and they're talking about the king of rock and roll. And the real king of rock and roll was...
it wasn't a white so man.
It wasn't Elvis Presley, that's for sure.
I mean, Lead Belly, you could give him the title. Or
yeah, all those guys.
Instead of a king, just queen, and just leave it at Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
There you go.
Call it good right there. Big Mama Thornton. Oh, Bessie Thornton. Oh, hell yeah.
There's a new book out about Big Mama Thornton and the struggle she went through her whole life, not just to struggle with her identity as an artist, as a musician, as a female musician, but also her identity as a gay artist. Gay musician
back then.
Oh, it's really interesting. And Google books on Big Mama Thornton. And if I had it right here in front of me, I'd read the title. But
I'll look it up because I'm a big admirer. You know,
that's the problem with doing these kind of interviews with the good other half, a good interviewer. Conversations like this end up costing me a lot of money.
More books and albums to buy.
There you go.
Our house is so full, we have to build the next edition out of the books we can't store.
I know I start culling the herd, you know, I'll buy a new one and say I gotta throw two out or give two away.
It's painful every time.
I said I was going to read just one more, but I guess I lied. I want to read one more, and this is my last. I promise to, honest to God, this is the last one. And it's about, you know, when you reach this kind of age, you start, again, looking back, as always. And here's one from our new book. And it goes, I worked as a bill collector once for a week. That's as long as it lasted, maybe not even that long, maybe not a week, maybe just a couple of days. I just couldn't take the sad, transparent excuses made by people who had even less than I had, and I had nothing. I already knew their excuses and their lies. I knew that all they wanted was for me to turn around and get off their porch and leave them alone. Maybe that's why it hardly even hurt when I got pushed down a flight of stairs by some guy in a red shirt who couldn't take getting pushed around anymore and finally decided to just push back.
Wow. I love that one. So powerful.
Thank you. Thank you. It's always fun getting to talk with you.
You too.
And it's fun looking ahead. It's fun talking old rock and roll. You and I get to talk jazz. Again, today I was playing the guy from the Allman Brothers. What was his name?
Dwayne Allman. Oh, Dwayne Allman. I was thinking.
Greg Allman. You're right, Greg. And I read in an interview where he said for years and years, practically the only album he played was Miles Davis's Kind of Blue.
I love that album.
And, oh, it's the jazz album.
It's in our collection.
I pulled it out again today. We got a really neat stereo system in our TV room.
Fantastic.
And I blasted it with that great piano opening with Gil Evans on the piano, just hitting the...
Isn't he a genius?
Oh, it was great.
I can play that, you know. I play piano.
Oh, you can play that intro.
I can play the song. I play all blues.
So you know it. And for anybody who is listening now, please go out and buy Miles Davis's Kind of Blue and play it with headphones or play it real loud, and you could thank me later.
I would play it now. My piano's like right here, but I think I would mess up the recording a little bit. But yeah, Bill Evans. I took jazz piano for a while from Khalif Neville, who is son of Charles Neville of the Neville Brothers.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. If you're going to take jazz piano from anyone, like, you know, just go.
Aim high.
Go with a Neville.
Yeah. Wow.
But I was listening to Kind of Blue and listening to that song, All Blues, and I texted Khalif. He's a young guy, by the way. He's maybe 29, 6'4", he's got a duck through doorways.
Yeah, the whole family are big guys.
Yeah, skinny, but very tall. But I'm like, you know, I'm listening to All Blues, and I'd been working on an improvisational piece with him, and I said, you know, the chord structure is similar if I just transpose it into a different key. And I finally listened to Bill Evans, highly instructive. And he's like, well, get this album. So Waltzes for Debbie. And all of a sudden I got a bunch of Bill Evans in my record collection too. And yep. Jazz piano. That's the thing I do.
Waltzes for Debbie. You and I got to be the only two people, maybe three people who have that album, Waltzes for Debbie.
That's unfortunate. Everyone should.
There's so much good stuff out there.
That's a fantastic album.
I try to keep current, and keeping current doesn't only mean what's new out there. I try to keep current by knowing the old stuff too. I try to keep current by reading old books. I'm currently now on a
speaking of current,
Jules Verne kick.
Oh, nice.
And he, for me, reminds me a lot of Jack London with his prose style.
I can see that.
Yeah, stylistically, they're very similar. Of course, they had different types of subject matter, but Jules Verne, I like his books. And there's a publisher called Seawolf Press, S-E-A Wolf Press, and they publish reprints of classic books with all the original typefaces, all the original illustrations, and they're all very affordable. Like I get all these Jules Verne titles for $8.95.
Beautiful. No way.
For $9. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Check them out.
I will consider.
Well, you know, I really should be promoting our two titles.
It's okay to promote other people too. I'm equal opportunity that way.
That's true.
It's fine.
Our two titles, 24 Poems and People and Other Bad Ideas, I'm really pleased with those. I'm pleased with my other new one called The Street. I'm on a bit of a roll. I'm lucky to be 72 and where I am to have friends like you guys. I'm in a good spot right now. So thank you.
I'm thrilled to hear it. And I still have a little bit more chit-chat to do with you. And you just compelled me to recommend to you a really brilliant podcast that I think you'd enjoy listening to. And it's called, and it's not by a friend of mine or anything. I just think you'd like it a lot since you mentioned Jules Verne. But it's called A Race Around the World in 80 Days. And it's by Adrian Bain, B-E-H-N. I'll put it in the show notes. And
yeah, please. I'm trying to write as we're talking here.
It's stellar. She compares the story of Nellie Bly.
Yes.
And Elizabeth Bisland. And they.
Now, for people who don't know Nellie Bly, she was an early.
Oh,
was she a reporter? And she had herself committed to an asylum in upstate New York. And
she changed the conditions.
That took balls. She had herself committed to an asylum with nobody backing her. Nobody knew she was there. And she was in there for several weeks. That took guts.
I was very proud to know that before she took on her reporting name, her given name was Elizabeth Jane, first and middle. And that's my name. I'm Elizabeth Jane. I was like, wait a minute. That's a fun thing. But I think you would really love this podcast. And Nellie Bly actually meets up with Jules Verne. So it tells about that experience. And it's for a Jules Verne fan or for anyone, it's wonderfully told. Brilliant. So since we're talking about stuff like this, you know, I don't interview. We just let the conversations unfold wherever they will. But I do have my three questions at the end because it's always fun.
Okay.
So what are you reading these days?
What am I reading these days? I told you I'm reading Jules Verne like crazy. I'm reading. Don't laugh, but it's not funny. I'm reading War and Peace, probably for the 12th time.
Wow.
It seems I always start War and Peace. I love that book.
Tolstoy.
It seems I always start it in the winter, in the cold time, where I could read it up in bed under the covers. Mm-hmm. I'm reading War and Peace. I'm reading the Men in the Boat, that new movie that's out. Or is it The Boys in the Boat? Whatever. I'm reading that right now. I'm always got two or three or even four books going at any given time.
Me too.
It's so much more fun that way. And I'm reading The Magnificent Ambersons. It was a 1922 novel that won the Pulitzer Prize, and it's really, really good. The Magnificent Ambersons.
I might have to get my hands on that one.
And that's all I'm reading right now.
That'll keep you busy.
It will. What's your second question?
What are you listening to these days?
Well, I told you Miles Davis.
Love Miles Davis. And Bill Evans, of course.
Yeah, I'd have to run upstairs to say what I'm listening to because there's a whole stack of stuff there. But the absolute last thing I had played was Miles Davis this afternoon. So that's what I'm listening to.
I think that's fantastic. I don't like to let too much time go by without a Davis listen.
There's another group that I played yesterday, a German group from the 1970s called Can.
C-A-N. I love Can.
Really?
Oh, hell yes.
this connection.
I'm a big fan of Can. Krautrock in general. But
I thought nobody else heard about those guys.
I have Can on vinyl. I have a couple of their albums.
Well, I don't know whether you know or don't know, but in recent years, the last 4 or 5 years, they've released on CD their concerts.
Ooh. And
that's what you got to get into, because they would get out, they would not plan anything ahead of time. They would get out on stage and just start. And the concerts would turn into two-hour jams, just winging it. No lyrics, just music, and they would play straight for 90 minutes, 2 hours. Check them out. There's five. They have Can live in Stuttgart, 1975, live in Brighton, 1975, live in Cuxhaven, 1976. They're all live albums, and they're incredible. For me, they're even better than their studio albums.
That's fantastic. Yeah, Mother Upduff is one of my more favorite Can songs. I was on a podcast a while ago. I hope she releases the episode soon, learn German through music. And I was discussing my five favorite German bands, and Can came up. Because Holger Suke, what a genius was he.
It's fun learning about, you know, these things that it's fun knowing stuff that some people don't know.
Totally.
To put it bluntly. another album that I was listening to yesterday that I play a lot is from a group from they only had about two good years, 1969 and 1970. They were an LA-based group called Love.
Oh, I love Love.
Again, for anybody that doesn't know Love.
I own Love, on vinyl, but on CD. But I own Love.
Get their album. Now I'm talking to the audience here. Their album Forever Changes.
Yes.
And
solid.
That thing, it's totally current. It's held up for 50 years. Oh. Forever Changes by the group Love.
It's amazing. It's fantastic. Yep. I used to play it for my teenage daughter years ago. And when I first put it on, she thought it was like a new band.
Yeah.
She's like, who is this? And she's not a teenager anymore. This is 15 years ago. Now she's 30.
Uh-huh. Wow. But
yeah. Mm-hmm. How it goes. So what?
Okay. Question number three.
What are you watching these days?
What am I watching these days? We started watching on streaming. We don't get a lot of opportunity because I'm reading all the time, but we started streaming Only Murders in the Building.
Oh my God, I love that show.
it cracks me up. All three of them are brilliant.
Selena Gomez is like the breakout star.
Yeah, she surprises me. She's really good.
Her very dry, deadpan humor.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
And she just fits in with those two old prose. Oh, Martin Short, he always reminds me. He reminds me of an old time vaudevillian. I get like a Milton Berle type vibe coming off him. You know? I was trying to tell my wife the other day. I said somebody old died, and it was Shecky Green.
Oh my God, that's heartbreaking.
He was 97, Shecky Green. He, for people who don't know, he was a Borscht Belt type comic.
Exactly.
Never really made it to the A list, but he was good and he was funny. And Shecky Green just passed away at 97.
Oh.
So those are your three questions.
May he rest in power.
Yeah.
So was he the one that originated the, I just flew in from Las Vegas and boy are my arms
boy
tired.
Boy are my arms tired.
I think that was him. I think he started that.
Oh, jeez.
And he might have been behind the Take My Wife.
Please.
I think that those are Borscht Belt, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
How fantastic. Wow. Well, we found out we've got more in common than we thought before. Both love...
Even more, yeah.
Ridiculous.
This is good. We've done three episodes. I hope you're pleased with the results. I'm pleased to get to share an hour with you guys.
Oh, always.
This is fun. And I hope people who hear this will... not only get these books, but also research the people that we've talked about. Miles Davis and Can and Love and Bill Evans. There's so much interesting, fun stuff.
Shecky Green.
Shecky Green. Take My Wife, please.
Well, this has been such a treat, John, as always. So, so much fun. I think this has done the job of the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. That was great.
Wasn't that wonderful? Wasn't that so, so much fun?
Mm-hmm.
Every time I talk with John Yammers, I find out more things we have in common.
Yeah, he's a really fascinating
And this
guy.
Is the third time. It's wild. So stay tuned for our next series. We'll be doing a little pushcart nominee series. Conversations with those folks.
Yeah, probably about three episodes.
Not sure who I'm tapping first. That's why I'm not announcing a name, but one of them, you'll find out.
One or two. Yep. We may have a duo conversation.
Yeah, depending on timing for them, timing for us.
As they say, watch this space.
That's right.
Well, thank you all for sticking around.
And do like Death by DVD.
Yeah.
Dig back into the back catalog. Start from the beginning.
Do what they did. Go back to the beginning. It's nice.
Fun.
But for now, I think we're good, right?
Yep. Sayonara, sweeties.
All right. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
The Meat for Tea cast is produced by Elizabeth McDuffie and Meat for Tea, The Valley Review. Visit Meat for Tea at www.meatfortea.com. Please consider going to anchor.fm to make a contribution through our contribution page. You can reach us through meatforteacast@gmail.com, or you can leave a voice message at anchor.fm/meatforteacast. We welcome suggestions for contents for the Meat for Tea cast. If you've attended a Meat for Tea circ and want to hear from one of the bands or one of the spoken word contributors, please let us know. All portions are copyright Meat for Tea and their respective holders. Vote for Meat for Tea on your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter at Elizabeth, Meat for Tea on Instagram, and on the Meat for Tea and Meat for Tea cast Facebook pages. Meat for Tea is available everywhere you get your favorite podcasts.